Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head. That's that lump that's 3 feet above your ass.
People will come, Ray.
Don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Indeed it has. High atop the hill on the knob. It is a hot, hot day in San Francisco.
It is. Summer has arrived here.
Oh, it has. It's in full force. It says 82, but of course, you know, in this studio, it's about 96 and only getting hotter.
Nice toasty.
Thank you for joining us once again. I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul.
Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Leave a comment. Podomatic website. West Coast Bias Baseball Podcast. You know, come on. You know
the drill by now.
You know the drill. iTunes may be extinct soon, but that will not stop us. And it's certainly not going to stop baseball. So have no fear. We're not going anywhere.
We'll be right here, boiling and drinking beer.
Watching the amazing show that is the Hunjin Ryu show, just destroying baseball right now as we speak.
Because it's
Walker Buehler tonight.
But against Madison Bumgarner.
Against Mad Bum.
Right here in beautiful, sunny San Francisco, California.
Oh, it is very sunny. Come on. Hunjin Ryu is just killing it right now. Scherzer just passed him in war. Let's say he pitched last night, but Ryu was leading. He's still 3.3 right now, leading all. Scherzer now is 3.4. But let's say at the top, Ryu has the best ERA, 1.35. He's got the most wins with 9. I know we don't really talk about wins, but hey, when it benefits a West Coast team, you know, we'll talk about it. He has the best whip in baseball at 0.775. He's got the best walk rate in baseball at 0.563. I mean, I could keep going on. There's a lot of other peripheral stats that, only the true baseball fans love. Which is all of you, because otherwise you wouldn't be listening to this. But
probably not.
Wow. I mean, what a run.
Yeah, he's been killing it for sure. It's been quite amazing to watch.
Strikeout to walk ratio. Again, I keep going on. But anyway, you were saying he's done something that only, one other?
Well, yeah. Well, he has the lowest ERA in Dodgers history through 12 games.
I believe that. Who, that'd be Kershaw? Is Kershaw number one?
No, he'd actually be number four, surprisingly.
Really?
Yes. Donnie Drysdale.
Drysdale.
As number one.
Sure.
And formerly number two, now number three, would be
Koufax.
Interesting.
Yeah, that sounds about right. That's like the Royal Trinity up there. I mean, throwing Don Sutton. And I'm sure he's probably around there.
He's probably up there too, but
maybe Fernando. Situational wins saved, adjusted pitching runs, win probability added, base out runs saved. I mean,
he's just killing it all in all categories.
I don't even know what that last
all categories means, except for WAR now because of Scherzer's outstanding start last time out.
Right, and so, but you know, again, maybe after Ryu's next start. We'll see. Maybe he'll pass. But again, I mean, 3.3, 3.4.
Where is he rotation? Does he pitch after Buehler? Be pitching tomorrow or next Dodgers game?
They're very fluid, the Dodgers starters. They sort of go with the flow depending on days off. You know, nowadays it's just not like how it used to be. You can't count on.
That's true.
Oh, it's this day, so it must be. But anyway, I mean, but the next pitcher for WAR is Castillo in Cincinnati. He's got 2.8, so Scherzer and Rue sitting high atop that WAR category right now. The only people in the threes. But hey, it's great considering that when you say Clayton Kershaw isn't even the best starter in that rotation, he might not even be the second best with Walker Buehler. But of course, he's still the greatest.
He's still Clayton Kershaw.
He's still Kershaw, of course. And so that's a really, really good problem to have. Now, I have a bone to pick with the Giants. on Friday, speaking of Mr. Clayton Kershaw.
Oh, why? Because they snapped his winning streak?
No, yeah. They snapped his no-loss streak, actually, as it were. Kershaw had 21 consecutive starts dating back to July 21st of last year without recording a loss.
That's almost an entire calendar year. Very, very impressive.
It's
but
insane.
I am very happy that... the Giants in their abysmal season was able to come up with that particular nugget of joy.
I mean, and that game, by the way, was a 4-2 loss to Milwaukee, where only one of those runs was actually earned. So Kershaw, I mean, who knows what would have happened if...
then that date would have been pushed back from wherever the last time that he had recorded a loss.
2017, 2016. I know. And, of course, he goes up against, who was that, Pomerantz on Friday, who walked into that game with an 8.08 ERA.
Which is not an ERA. That's the area code for Hawaii. yeah, no, and Pomerantz had gotten shelled the last two outings.
Yeah, well, I know. And then, of course, Kershaw brings out the best in everybody.
He does.
I think we could just...
And, you know, one of the great things about this this rivalry between the Giants and the Dodgers is that midsummer game, or early, I guess it's late spring,
feels like midsummer, but yes.
Feels like it's early in the season, just past a quarter way through the season, and... Oracle Park has an atmosphere like the playoffs when the Dodgers are in town.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. It's always a lot of fun when the Giants and Dodgers play.
Unless I go to the game, then the Dodgers can be
It's
winning
still a lot of fun. But yeah. you weren't at the game on Friday, but
no,
they still managed to lose without you in attendance.
I know. I was telling a coworker, I was like, it's going to be a one-run game. Even though it's Kershaw, it doesn't matter. The Dodgers don't ever give him any run support at AT&T or Oracle, whatever. The Dodgers could be winning 106 games. The Giants could be losing 100 games. But when they meet up here, it's anything goes. Even when they meet in LA, I guess, too. When they meet, it's basically playoff baseball. Right?
Oh, yeah.
There's never a 10-8 game. It's never a blowout like that. It seems... pretty strange, even though the Giants have a constantly rotating lineup that I usually know half the guys on the team. And I feel like most Giants fans only know like half the guys on the team.
Yeah, it's been crazy. There's definitely been a revolving door.
Yeah. Who's playing left field for the Giants right now? Because is it Yaz? Is it I can't. Pilar?
I think Yaz is in center.
He's in center, right? Yeah. Because I find that interesting because Pilar is a great outfielder, so
right.
Yaz must be pretty damn good out there.
Yeah, well, he's fast.
He's got younger legs.
Kid's got wheels for sure.
So who's playing left? Is that just a constantly?
That's a very good question. since Bonds retired, that answer could be made by 70 different names.
Is that a fact?
Yeah,
it's
70 different players the Giants have played in left field since Bonds retired.
Wow.
Including a different one every year on opening day.
Really?
Yeah. I am Bonds retiring left a huge hole in the roster, and not even three World Series in 5 years was able to
solidify
anything. Fill that hole. Fill that void.
Ouch. Well, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. Maybe you get rid of Bumgarner and you'll get some healthy young prospects.
Oh, well, that's certainly the talk of the town around here is that where is Bumgarner going to get traded to? He was apparently asked a couple weeks ago in a post-game interview how he felt about how he would feel about pitching for the Yankees.
Hmm.
And he basically shut it down. He said, last time I checked, I looked behind him. There's his Giants jersey. He says, I'm still with this club, and we're trying to win games here.
Come on, Bum. He's just asking you a hypothetical question, all right?
He doesn't want to speculate, but it would be interesting
now,
where he's going.
That's
one
true.
Of the places that was rumored may not be such a hot landing spot for him was Atlanta.
Hmm. Well, that's not going to happen anymore.
Right. Well, I mean, this
we know that
what I'm saying, because Atlanta,
cross that one off the board.
Atlanta made a big signing.
Right. Braves, of course, you've probably already seen this, but finalized a one-year deal with Dallas Keuchel. I think there's still a physical pending, but I'm sure he's fine. The deal is worth $13 million. And
is it 1 year?
Yeah. Well, okay, so... Yes, he becomes a free agent after the season. The Braves can't extend him a qualifying offer, though, since he received one in the previously in his career. But Keuchel had been searching for a contract, you know, since November, I guess, really. I mean, he turned down the Astros' one-year $17.9 million qualifying offer. And so he's going to have to test the free agent market again next offseason. The $13 million he's going to receive is the prorated portion of a one-year $20 million deal. So, you know, it's kind of like, should you have just taken the qualifying offer at 17.9?
And played the whole year?
Right. And play on a good team? I mean, the Braves are good. And the Braves will probably take their division. So I guess he's still sitting pretty, I guess. But it does
kinda
seem
like, contender,
like a whole lot
least.
Of... A whole lot of hullabaloo, I guess. I think they kind of, both of them, him and Kimbrel, maybe overestimated their worth.
Kimbrel just signed the 2 days before, 1 day before with the Cubs.
It was a day and a half, 2 days before, I think.
2 days before. It was a very short period.
Right. And they were really only able to do that because, so Kimbrel signed, he's going to earn $10 million in 2019, $16 million in 2020. And 2021, so with a $16 million vesting option for 2022. But they were really only able to do this because of Ben Zobrist's family matter. I'm doing air quotes here. He's essentially getting divorced, and I don't think it's a very pretty divorce. I think it's quite messy. So, but silver lining for Cubs fans, I mean, considering Zobrist is, what, 37, 38 years old, that freed up a lot of money because if he doesn't play, they don't have to pay him. And right. So it will be kind of interesting to see what will happen if Zobrist does come back. I mean, I'm sure they'll figure it out. And
Cubs got money.
I think they're saying, hey, why don't you just take your time over there in Divorceville? That's pretty tough. But Ken Rosenthal reported that the Rays presented Kimbrel with two offers, one for 2 years at $31 million with a club option, and the other for 3 years at $39 million. So... You know, his three-year $43 million deal with the Cubs does seem pretty damn good. But I don't know. Would you rather pitch in Fenway? I mean, I'm sorry, in Wrigley or Tropicana? I wouldn't want to play in Tropicana, but I think I'd rather pitch there.
I don't, maybe he just didn't want to become an opener.
Ooh, that's true. Well, I don't think they would make a $43 million man an opener. But, I don't know. That is interesting. And that kind of... okay, so does the name Ryan Stanek mean anything to you?
Sounds familiar.
Not Ryan Sandberg.
No, I...
Although it's spelled the same way. So the Rays' favorite opener, as you say, was on the mound against Detroit on Thursday. And he now has started... again, I'm doing air quotes. We should probably have...
It makes for great radio.
I have to narrate my body language. He has now started 17 games this season, which means that, theoretically, he's on pace to start, again, 46 games this season, which would be the most starts by a non-knuckler since Dave Davenport started 46 times for the late, great St. Louis Terriers of the Federal League back in 1915. But wait! Dave Davenport threw... 392 and two-thirds innings that year. Ryan Stanek might not even come within 300 of that. Basically what I'm getting at is, I think it's high time we create some new terminology. And we're going to leave this open to the loyal listeners. Here, leave the comments, leave your answer, leave your suggestions, you know where. But because we need to create a whole new column, essentially, on the stat sheet, because... Game started, GS, really isn't quite capturing what Ryan Stanek and his opener cohorts are doing for a living, right? So just like we added saves decades back, we're going to have to add something else. So basically, what do we call this? Do we call them inaugurations? Do we call them births? How about onsets? Conceptions? Inceptions? Opens just sounds weird. Doesn't sound right. Will we see, you know, in the probable starters page, probable conceivers? Birthers?
It really is a very good question.
Probably inceptors? But... I don't know.
I
don't know, but
well, here's
opens. I guess
here's the thing. I think category would probably have to go with opens, but until this whole opener position really becomes a thing, and there's a lot of these players, I don't know if we necessarily have to be so quick and to come up with this new category.
Not everybody was saving games. I mean, not every team had like a closer designated for a while, but I think it's in our best interest to on the side of
possibly can we just leave
recording
that,
the stat.
Can we leave those starts for an asterisk next to his name for the year.
See, that's too little, too sloppy. I don't know. That's a little too messy. That's like, I don't know. Like,
or do we have to redefine a start to be you start the first inning and then go more than
one plus innings, essentially?
Yeah.
So one batter, one out in the second, and that's a start, maybe. Maybe, because these guys really are just meant for one inning. And so, you know, yeah, sure, sometimes a starter comes in and gets shelled and leaves in the first, maybe leaves in the second. It's still a started game, and that's important. But, he was supposed to have started. So that stat needs to be there as a starter because he's a starting pitcher, and he was supposed to go six right. or seven. But then when a guy's only supposed to go one inning, I don't know. There needs to be, because it's happening so often now. And the Rays aren't going
to
stop.
And I know, you know, not to compare baseball to inferior sports, but in both basketball and football, the starters, a lot of times there's, you know, someone will come in for the, in football, someone will come in for the very first play from scrimmage. And then come right back out afterwards for the second, and they're still considered the starting player for in that position.
But that's not really a stat that matters in football, right? I
mean, well, but if you're considered a starter in football, you're going to make a lot more money in your contracts.
Right, but nobody's going to be confused by a guy who takes one snap as a starter and offer him, you know, $60 million because they think he's a... his role.
He may play other snaps, but you know, the fact that he's not in there, you know, he just comes in one, maybe leaves for, you know, second and third down, comes back in for the fourth.
Yeah. Well, again, yeah, apples and oranges. But so you don't think there needs to be a new stat line?
Not right away.
I think really just for posterity's sake, just like we didn't count RBIs in Babe Ruth's era, but I wish we had. Because it would be nice to be able to look back at all those guys, right? I mean, some people can go back and infer and figure it out, but, you know, it would just be nice because essentially if we don't do it now, it's like we're saying it's never going to catch on. So, but I think it will. I think this isn't going to go away.
You think this will? You're sold on this whole opener thing?
Not necessarily sold universally, but it's going to happen every year for the rest of baseball. Some team's going to do it, you know, probably the worst teams. But hey, look at the Rays. The Rays aren't nearly the worst team. In fact, they're making a run, you know.
They're currently in second place behind the Yankees.
Right, and this is what I was thinking last year with Milwaukee in the postseason. If they had won the pennant, that would have really changed the game because they had openers for, I don't know, four out of those seven games. Of course, the A's tried it in the wild card game, lost, and that didn't really work. But again, had that worked, I don't know. I mean, look, it's the idea of starting pitchers, guys going long in games, is becoming a diminishing.
Right, and has for a while, and we've noted this. Now it's going to start shrinking on the other end too, and you're starting pitcher, your long pitcher, is going to come in relief in the second inning and then go six innings.
Yeah.
And throw his 100 pitchers, and then you're going to go back to the bullpen, and no one's really a starting pitcher.
That's when I just want some clarity. It's funny you say that, because on Monday we saw something we hadn't seen in a long time, and that was Wade LeBlanc threw eight innings in relief for the Mariners after their first opener of the year, Corey Guerin. See, this is another team that's doing it. Had finished serving up three runs to the Astros in the first. That's exactly what you just said. Right. That just happened.
And he doesn't get number for the quality start.
Exactly.
Because he didn't start. But
so there should be some clarity as to why, right? And you should be able to read it in number form or in timetable form, essentially, just like you would read in the paper. You know, that's the great thing about baseball. You can just read the box score and understand what happened throughout the game, essentially. You know,
a traditional starter, say like a Kershaw or a Bumgarner, who's not going to come in the second inning. They're going to start that game that they're pitching. That becomes an unusual role, a specialized role, someone who can come in and just like dominate from the word go.
I mean, I hate to see that happen, but I think we'd be foolish to think that it won't.
Yes. And so we keep the starter stat, but that becomes more and more rare as the opener, opening stat, game openings.
Yeah. It's hard to get a pitcher out there every 5 days, especially nowadays when, you know,
pitch counts are
look at Paddock with San Diego. I mean, is he going to hit 200 innings? Most likely not. There's no way. So what are they going to do once they have to essentially Strasburg him? I mean, that's what it's kind of been. I mean, Strasburg is kind of like the new Tommy John, in that you say, we're going to Strasburg him. You know exactly what that means. We're going to limit his pitches. We're going to limit his innings. We're going to completely shut him down for the rest of the year at the end of August, even if we're making a playoff run, you know. Which the Padres aren't going to be doing, although, you know, hey, knock on some wood here. But
Things have happened.
Yeah, I know. It's true. But I don't know. It is weird. It is strange. But, yeah, the Mariners just started it for the first time, you know. Seemed to not be horrible. I mean, the guy went eight innings. So when was the last time any pitcher ate up at least eight innings in relief in a nine-inning game?
Nothing comes to mind.
Right.
It had to have been a while. I know it's
been a while.
I mean, I've seen players recently come in, do six plus innings, but
usually
an extra inning,
not in a nine inning
feat.
Game.
Right.
Exactly. You would have to go back 31 years.
31
to,
years.
To May 31st, 1988, when Neil Allen threw nine innings for the Yankees.
Jeez.
In that fateful game, Al Leiter got drilled by a Carney Lansford rocket back to the mound.
Oof.
Leading off the game. So then Allen came in, got all 27 outs.
Yeah. Wow.
But I mean, with Wade LeBlanc, you know, he threw eight. That's very rare, but, you know, we might see that happen more. So speaking of course.
Well, will we though? Because I mean, with pitch counts and most of these relievers, maybe 30, maybe 40 pitches and an outing. So to leave a reliever in for that long?
No, right.
They have to be super efficient. You're
right.
Not going to be able to go eight innings on 30 pitches.
He'd have to be super young and, you know, possibly a starter in his future kind of thing. Yeah. So I don't know. So there's a lot of rumors going around. Obviously, we were talking about Bumgarner, maybe Brad Hand, maybe Trevor Bauer. Now that, unfortunately, Cookie is out, Carrasco is out indefinitely. I mean, it's not looking good.
Yeah, this is unfortunate. He was my best pitcher in my fantasy team.
Yes, that's
and I've got to replace him.
The man's about to die, and you can only think about your fantasy team. How dare you? Although I'm glad I don't have him, let's be honest. Okay, I love you, Cookie. You won me a championship in the years past. I hope you do okay. I really hope to see him again.
Get well soon.
But it's brutal for the Indians, right? And so when their best pitcher is Trevor Bauer, who can be good, but you know, when that's your best, you're trying to make a playoff run, probably not going to happen. Now, we said this before the season even started, that looking at the Indians roster, and that's when Kluber was healthy, that's when Carrasco was healthy, I still didn't understand how they were going to easily win their division. I figured maybe they'd make a push, maybe they might win, but I couldn't see how it was a shoe-in, like most people were saying. And now, of course, the Twins are just raking. But could we see a possible trade for Trevor Bauer, possibly to the Padres? Now, he's 1 year away from free agency, which makes him pretty much a perfect fit for a team that's trying to be competitive, and that is competitive this season, but is really more looking to next year and the year after. And the Padres need innings, you know. And as we're talking about with Paddock, the guy's dominant, but he's been cooling down a lot lately, and he's probably not going to start finish the season. But Bauer has averaged 28 starts and 174 innings over the last five seasons. So,
right, but if you're the Padres and you're looking to next year to really start competing in true fashion, why would you give something up? Who would you give up for just a rental?
Well, that's true. But, you know, they've already brought up most of their best, and they have a deep farm system.
I think Bauer is going to be one of the people who's ultimately going to be competing with Bumgarner for
right.
and the Giants for right. For a trade, because similar situation. He's ultimately a rental player, a good one, but he's going to go to a team that is a contender.
Bauer is a year away from free agency. Where
I thought you just said that he was a free agent at the end of this year.
No. He is a year away from free agency. Yeah. Whereas Bumgarner will be a free agent.
So he's got a year and a half left.
More or less. But you said it before, and I still think that Bumgarner to the Yankees makes a lot of sense. You know, there was a lot of talk about maybe Keuchel going to the Yankees. And
now they didn't get him.
Yeah, and maybe that's for the better. Think about it. It seems kind of like a perfect trade. It seems like everybody would get what they want. The Yankees aren't going to trade their number one prospect, Estevan Florial. But maybe righties, Ronzi Contreras, he's number 10. And Nick Nelson, I believe his name is, he's sitting at their number 11. He could be pretty good. I mean, again, they get Bumgarner for a postseason stint. He's obviously one of the best postseason performers in modern history. Now, he's maybe not the exact same Bumgarner as he was 6-7 years ago. But, hey, I mean, he's not going to hurt the Yankees by any means.
No, definitely not.
I mean, that guy competes. You know, he's dangerous. And now I know he's a Texan living in SF going to...
he's Georgian.
Georgian. Oh, sorry. Southern.
Yeah,
going from SF southern. To New York. I don't think he might not want to go to New York. I don't blame him. But if the Yankees are healthy and they're making a push, and Severino, who knows? You know, we still don't really know what's going to happen there. Maybe he comes back for one start and completely blows it out. I don't know. We'll see. But to me, it does seem like now, especially since the Cubs and the Braves are off the table, and we talked about last time, Milwaukee's
well, the Cubs
already
still
pretty
might,
much used
Cubs.
Their best.
The Cubs still might want a starter.
Yeah, but they can't afford a starter. You know, they already blew
their
money.
But if it's just a rental, they maybe can.
Possibly.
I mean, there's no salary cap.
I don't know
if the Cubs got money. They sell out.
No, yeah, no. Their money's fine, but I don't know if their depth is as good as, say, the Padres or the Yankees. In fact, I'm sure it's not. Whereas maybe even the Rays, of course, always have a strong farm system, just like the Dodgers, right? But could we also see maybe Zach Greinke? Maybe to the Cardinals, perhaps?
I don't see how that wouldn't be out of the question.
Yeah.
I think the Cardinals definitely would be a landing place for all the pitchers as well.
Yeah, that's true. Greinke is still one of the best, but he also is still owed $70 million over the next two seasons. So the Diamondbacks will obviously have to pay some of that down.
Right. We also still got 7 weeks before the trade deadline, so it'll be interesting to see as the month progresses what happens. Because I honestly haven't heard too many rumors about where Bumgarner may or may not be going. Mm. There's only the suggestion with the question by the press about the Yankees, but
now
that's not necessarily a rumor.
Giants could be sitting pretty by also getting rid of Will Smith, possibly two.
Will Smith is a viable, at this point, is a very viable trade maybe candidate. Maybe
to the Twins, perhaps? They have a good closer, system.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Giants get, let's say, best case scenario, players from the Yankees and Twins organization. That's pretty good for, you know, for a short-term rental, essentially. I think they're going to have to do that, right? Are you going to shed a tear when Mr. Bumgarner is gone, or what?
Well, yeah. I mean, it'll be sad to sad to see him go. I mean, he is quite an entertaining fellow to watch out there. He's going to be a soccer
player. Yeah, you're right. And I don't know if he's going to do well in New York. He probably will, though. I mean,
I can't imagine. He excels in the pressure situations. There's no doubt.
I haven't really seen any other rumors to speak of, except for possibly Brad Hand to the Dodgers, maybe. Hand is about as unhittable as any reliever in the game right now with the 105 ERA, and mixed with, of course, Kenley Jansen, they would have the best NL bullpen for sure if they had him. Now, I don't really know what... I don't really know how that could happen, but... Maybe a shrewd trade, help the Indians rebuild a little bit. Dodgers have a plethora of young talent, and you never know. Maybe that'll be like that final push, you know, a little hand up, little hand, help the Dodgers finally.
Sure, Brad, just throw those puns out there, yes.
How about Mr. Jay Bruce getting his fourth home run in four games with his new team, the Phillies? Pretty good. He's the first Phillies player in the modern era to hit four home runs in his first four games with the team. And that's not all. He's already hit grand slams for teams in each league this season. And it's only June 9th. Or what is it? June 11th? 12th? I don't know what day it is. But nearly 200 plate appearances into the season. Jay Homer has more home runs. He's got 17 and counting. And more doubles, 13, than he has singles. He only has 11 singles. Now, I bet you could guess how many players in history have had a full season with more homers and doubles than singles. Of course, that would be zero. But Nomar Mazara, I thought, maybe would have given him a run for his money, because I'm pretty sure he just passed the 100 home run of his career mark before he passed 100 singles. Is that real? Is that correct?
I imagine it.
I'm sorry, Joey Gallo, not Nomar Mazara. Sorry, I always right. Interchange Gallo and.
Well,
Mazara,
see, now you're changing the question.
Sorry,
and yes, Joey Gallo.
I'm going to edit that part out.
Joey Gallo got his 100th home run 20 days before his 100th single.
Yeah, see, that's insane. Gallo is shaping up to be one of the more interesting men in baseball, sort of in that. Not quite there yet, but we'll see the rest of his career. In company with Adam Dunn and Ricky Henderson, two of the favorites, of course, on this podcast. And baseball minds in general. I mean, you can really just spend hours staring at all those guys' stats. But Joey Gallo, I believe I was looking at a stat lately, recently. Joey Gallo, Bryce Harper, I forget who the other person was, but they're basically on pace to break Reggie Jackson's record. Poor record, at least, of most strikeouts in baseball history. If Harper and Gallo stay healthy for at least another 10 years, I think they can do it.
Yeah.
Now,
it's quite possible.
I will say Gallo, though, has turned his, maybe not career, but his, let's say his career arc around this season extraordinarily. I mean, he is doing exceptionally well in not striking out as much. He's walking a little bit more.
Right.
He's getting the ball on the bat. The bat on the ball. It's been a long day. He's looking great. He's sort of, you know, proving wrong all his peripherals where, you know, he's a true three outcome guy kind of thing, you know, which is great to see. I like to see guys really sort of, you know, that have that elite power and sort of the elite skill, you know, get it done. It's cool to see that. Now, what the hell is going on with JD Martinez?
I don't know what is going on.
I will,
on with
you know what I'll tell
Martinez.
You because I have him on my fantasy team and it's destroying me. He left the game in the fifth inning due to back spasms on Friday. Do you know how he tweaked it? Apparently, according to Alex Cora, he felt something in his back when he was on base in the third and turned to judge the flight of a Rafael Devers fly ball. He literally just turned to watch the ball, and that was it. He's out. I mean, come on. Come on, JD. Where are you, man? Where's 2018, JD? I need him.
Is this better or worse than receiving a cracked rib during an in-home massage?
Ooh, are you talking about Carlos Correa?
I am.
Was he washing his car also?
Or I don't know.
His truck? Wait, hold on. He got a cracked rib by getting a massage?
That's one rumor. It's not totally unheard of.
How do you sleep at night?
Jesus.
I don't know if this was a happy ending type massage, but...
Bring out the gimp.
That's pretty brutal. I mean, if you're going to get... I mean, that must have been some deep tissue Swedish massage, like elbows and shit, right? That seems pretty, he's a grown man.
It's possible, yes.
Is it got his elbow cracked? Was he trying to do the old Marilyn Manson rumor thing? Was that what he was trying to do?
Maybe it was a backwalking situation where she stepped wrong or something.
The backwards man, like Tom Green? Oh, I wish I had that audio. That would be pretty good. No, that's pretty brutal. But that's bad. But it's not nearly as bad as Mitch Haniger.
Mitch Haniger.
Out with ruptured testicle.
Ow. That sounds extraordinarily painful.
Brutal. That is, I don't even have anything for that.
Do I dare ask how he managed to do that?
I fell ball off of, I mean, that's the thing I'm pretty sure was off of his own bat, which is pretty brutal.
Fail the cup check.
Just saw Shinsu Chu get hit today, sort of. I mean, it grazed his nether regions. And I think he passed everybody in Texas Rangers history. Now he is the most hit man in Texas. It's pretty good. Sorry, I had to get away from Mitch Haniger. That was just brutal.
Well, yeah, no, that's almost too painful to really dwell on that, for too long.
Can you ever come back from that? I mean, I guess Lance Armstrong did. You just got to juice up a lot. I don't know. That's pretty bad, though, man. You don't ever want to see that.
No.
Oh God.
But speaking of Shin Soo Chu, not only has
Shin Soo Chu,
yeah.
Say that two
times.
Bless
you.
Send your hate mail to samuelpaul@gmail.com.
So Chu not only becoming the most hit Texas Ranger in history, but he also is the first Asian-born player to reach the 200 home run milestone.
Really?
Really.
The first Asian?
The first Asian.
What? What about Hideki Matsui?
No, he didn't make it. Not 200 in the major league.
Wow, you're right. Matsui only 175. Wow, yeah,
he was close.
I overestimated it. Wow, you know Hideki had some great years, but I guess his career wasn't quite long enough.
Yeah. He was already an aging player by the time that he came over.
Interesting. Well, hey, rats off to you, Shin Soo Chu. I can say your name properly, but I don't know about the rest of America. It's okay. That's
just
pretty cool. So he got was that yesterday or today?
This was
earlier this week.
Earlier this week, 4 days ago.
Well, there you go, Shinsu. That's
Tuesday or Wednesday.
That's pretty cool. You know, he's been plagued with injuries throughout his career, but he's been pretty consistent. You know,
yeah, he's definitely having a career year this year.
That's pretty cool. Now, of course, there's the famous quote from Ichiro saying, "If they let me bat 250, I could hit 40 home runs a year."
Of course,
and the numbers prove it. I mean, I'm sure he could have. So. Ichiro could have been the only Asian American man to hit 500 home runs, and sometimes I wish he had. But it's like
that would have been some to see.
That would have been pretty cool. But how about just don't call it a double play? The Indians turned a 1-6-5-3 double play against the White Sox last Saturday. I can see you figure that out. Yeah, I see you drawing it out in your head. But there was one thing. That was strange. The White Sox didn't put a ball in play. Huh? How did that happen?
Was this some sort of like a pickoff play gone
indeed
awry?
Indeed it was. It was. A pickoff to second, and the White Sox did the rest, running themselves into two crazy outs. So how rare was this?
I can't imagine it's very common at all.
According to Stats LLC, yes. From every game since 1987, 1-6-5-3 double plays in the last 33 seasons without anybody putting a ball in play would be zero, of course, because baseball.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you see something new every day, right? Every day you go to the ballpark, you have a chance of seeing something you've never seen before.
Now, I'm sure you've noticed that Christian Yelich is hitting a lot of home runs.
Yes, he is lighting up.
As of now, Sunday afternoon, he has a lead in the National League with 23.
Which is quite impressive.
Now, what you may not have noticed is that he is also leading the league in steals with 13.
You're right. That one did slip by me.
Yes. It's because you don't see this very often. In fact, in the history of baseball, only three players have found a way to either lead their league in both of these departments over a full season. Now, the last player to do it was in 1932, and that would be Chuck Klein with 20 bags and 38 home runs, which actually sounds more like a modern stat than it does an old stat, because then we go back before that, Mr. Ty Cobb, the Georgia Peach, of course, in 1909 had 76 stolen bags and 9 home runs, which led the league, which is more, obviously, to the time, dead ball era, but pretty interesting. Now, of course, Cody Bellinger, by all rights, is leading every other category. Wins above replacement, including pitchers. Wins above replacement for position players, offensive war, defensive war, batting average, OBP. Again, just like Hyunjin Ryu, I can pretty much just keep going on and on, but I won't. But hey, he's still three behind Yelich in home runs, so Yelich could maybe get a different triple crown, but... Gerard Dyson doesn't start every day, so he might have something to say. But yeah, stolen bases in the National League are a little hard to come by, it seems.
Stolen bases in general, they're diminishing league-wide.
Certainly. It does seem like American League does it a lot better than the National League. It's just kind of interesting. So we'll see. Keep an eye on that, obviously. And you have no doubt also noticed that the AL leader in home runs would be Gary Sanchez with 19, I believe. I should probably double check that because I wrote this yesterday. But why is that so notable? Well, because catchers pretty much never lead their league in home runs. I thought Piazza did it once, and then I looked it up and he hadn't. But generally speaking, the last person to do it was in 1972, the big red machine. That would be Johnny Bench. Motherfucker hit 40 home runs that year.
That's impressive.
2 years before that, he hit 45. Yeah, pretty insane.
Yeah, that guy was good.
That guy was good. And then you got to go all the way back to 1883.
1883.
Buck Ewing had 10. Yeah, which, again, even back then, like that's a lot. Of course, back then, a home run was essentially just an inside-the-park home run, right? Back then, the crowd could stand on the field, and there's just like a little rope cordoning them off right from the outfield. So if it like went in there, right, it was technically a home run. But anyway, that's pretty cool. But that brings us to
I almost
lost my trousers. Yeah. Yes.
His those 23 home runs this year of which you speak, all but two or three have come at home.
Really?
Really.
Wow.
So because people are pitching him differently in Miller Park? Or is this a ballpark factor?
It's a baby park. That's what Puig called it, right? Didn't Puig call that a baby park last year?
Something like
that. Dodgers went there for the, and I'll say, oh yeah, that baby park? Yeah, sure, you know, yeah. Yeah, we're gonna have a gay old time there. It's gonna be fun.
So
what you're saying is Christian Yelich is cheap. Is that what you're saying? All of his home runs are cheap.
I don't know if that's what I'm saying. I don't know if that's what I'm saying, but I found this interesting. He's just not hitting on the road the way that he is hitting at home.
So people will talk about the Coors factor, but how about the Milwaukee factor? It seems like there's something going on.
Maybe
there,
it's just the beer companies paying more for home runs.
Well, I'll be there next year. I think I'm going to go there next year. I got to check that out. I hit up Coors this last weekend. That was a great stadium, by the way. That's a cool ass park, man.
It is.
May have the prettiest park near the sea, but the Rockies have the prettiest park in the sky. I mean, that park is gorgeous, and it's surrounded by the Rockies, of course, the literal Rockies.
Right.
Unbelievable. Great beer selection, too, I got to admit. It's maybe the best I've ever seen. Oscar really? Blues everywhere. I mean, there's so many great breweries in Denver, and I partook in about 30 to 40 good. Different beers right. that weekend. No, it was a great weekend.
Excellent.
Rockies won. I was hoping to see a Vlad Guerrero Jr. moonshot. Probably his, well, it's certainly his first time in Coors and maybe his last for half a decade or so, being on the Toronto Blue Jays. Alas, I didn't see that, but hey, it was still a hell of a game. Rained for like 20 minutes, and then it was 80 degrees. It didn't really make any sense, but that's
welcome
Colorado.
Welcome to Colorado, yes.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. I don't know how they breathe there, though, man. It's pretty brutal. I've spent my entire life at sea level, more or less, and after day two or three, I was having some issues breathing. So, you know, you could talk about the Coors Factor all you want, but at the same time, it's not easy to play there. It's not easy to sit there and drink beer. I mean, you know,
it's
let
true.
Alone
I mean,
run
that,
the bases. I mean,
that,
Jesus.
That the altitude really does make a difference more than just making the ball fly a little bit farther.
It's no joke, man. And so then when you could think about, sure, yeah, the ball fly is great there, but when you leave there and you're so used to that, and then you go somewhere at sea level, you go to AT&T and you see the break on that ball, it must be insane. So, I don't know. I think the Coors Factor need not apply anymore, especially since everybody's hitting home runs everywhere now, you know, and the strikeouts aren't really stigmatized as they used to be. But anyway.
Now, that's just like your opinion, man.
Yes, it is. And that brings us to our Ignoble Award of the Week.
Well, so our Ignoble Award this week has only peripherally related to baseball.
Huh?
I hate to get all environmentalist on this podcast, uh-oh. But no, our Ignoble Award this week will go to the much loved San Diego Padres.
Huh. I'm very confused. Continue.
So on last Sunday, a week ago from the recording of this podcast,
yeah.
The Marlins-Padres game in San Diego was delayed for 20 minutes due to a swarm of bees.
Oh, that's right.
This is not unusual.
Sure.
This happens
springtime.
Couple times a year, it seems like. It's already happened a couple times this year in various ballparks.
Yeah.
However, due to contractual obligations, the person who came out to deal with the bees was not a beekeeper, but an exterminator.
Oh.
And came out and straight up poisoned this swarm of bees, killed them all, and hauled them away in a garbage bag.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Jesus.
So, if you are... environmentally aware, the honeybee population in this country and in fact around the world is struggling to survive, and here is a healthy swarm looking for a new home, and the Padres, instead of helping them relocate to a good spot or to a honey farm somewhere in the area, they just killed them.
Yeah, because usually they bring
so many pests.
So it wasn't even a beekeeper. They couldn't.
It wasn't a beekeeper. Jesus. It was an exterminator.
Good
because
Lord.
They have some sort of contract with an extermination company
good
to
God.
Take care of Petco Park.
So usually they bring out some kind of smoke just
usually,
calm them down.
Yeah, usually a beekeeper comes and smokes them.
Calms
them down, makes them more docile. They go in, they capture the queen in the center in a specialized little box that'll keep her safe and alive, and walk out, and the bees will follow because
naturally.
The bees follow the queen.
Yeah. And they did not do that.
And they did not do that.
That should get the Ignoble Award of the Year.
Well,
you don't even have to be environmentally...
It is certainly
conscious to understand that if you want fruits or vegetables or flowers or honey, for that matter, you need motherfucking bees. All right?
Yeah, no, for sure. And this is a contender for a Nobel Award of the Year. And send your votes.
At night?
Yeah, that is awful. Wow. All right. Well. I mean, I don't even know whose fault it is. Like, I almost can't blame the guy. The guy is just doing his job. It's the higher ups that couldn't be bothered. All right, well, that's pretty brutal. That's kind of, we're ending it on a sad note here. I should have saved the ruptured testicle for after this. Yes, I mean, Jesus. all right, well, oh man, Yeah, that's pretty bad. All right, well, do you have anything else? Because I'm just gonna get straight to the trivia. No, I need a palate trivia. Yeah, I need something.
You need a palate cleanser.
Yeah, that was pretty brutal.
Does that do anything for you? I just, you know.
What are you talking about?
I don't know. I thought you had a new sound or something. But just
since you bring that up, of course we can't have it without it.
Fancy. Well. How fancy?
Does that help? Are you? I don't know.
Depends on what you're talking about there.
All right. Last week's trivia question: who won 25 or more games 3 times in the 1960s, but never won a Cy Young Award? Now, this is a good one. This is a tough one, question. Actually.
And it is a West Coast question.
Indeed it is. That's without giving away too much. Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Leave the comment, your answer on Facebook, Podomatic website, iTunes.
But that
comment,
was, you know, that was the last week.
That was last week's, I know. Just a reminder.
All right, okay.
I've been told that we don't say that enough. Okay. But anyway, I think we do. I think you guys know where to find us. You're listening to us right now, so hey. Ludacris Joe says Sam McDowell. Ooh, that's interesting. What's that?
I was going to say, that's an interesting guess.
That is a good guess. Now, he did have 20 wins once in his career, and 18 another year, I believe. And he had an ERA title, where he finished that year with a 2.18 ERA, and 6 seasons with a sub-3 ERA. But alas, no dice.
No
dice. It's pretty good, though. He didn't have 25 wins. Mandy C. in Pittsburgh. Is that Pittsburgh, California, you think? Pittsburgh,
I don't know.
Pennsylvania?
The most famous Pittsburgh, of course, is in Pennsylvania.
Sure.
But there is one locally. I mean, West Coast bias, perhaps. All she doesn't specify, does she?
All right, Mandy. She doesn't specify. Says Warren Spahn. Now, this is what I was thinking, actually. But he did, in fact, get a Cy Young Award. And he actually never had a 25...
Win games.
Win season. Wow. No, he had 20 wins or more 12 times in his career.
Wow.
But never 25. So definitely dominant. But of course, he did win a Cy Young. Just one, though, which is pretty interesting. But no, that's it. So, who won 25 or more games 3 times in the 1960s but never won a Cy Young? You were right. It is a West Coast man. That would be Juan Marichal.
Yeah. Pitching for the Giants.
Yeah. See, I was thinking Gaylord Perry also, but then he had one, or he might have had two, actually. He was dominant as hell. Juan Marichal was crazy, though.
Juan Marichal
that guy
was
would fight you.
Yeah.
he'd come at you with a bat. what do you have for me this week? So, yeah, no winners, no chicken dinners, but hey, there's always this week. And
it's always this week.
Yeah, you're going to give it to me right now.
Yeah. Right? So, talking about the number of home runs in the game today because of the juice ball. We'll probably get into that.
Juice ball?
Next
wait
thing.
A second.
Not to get into it too much right now because we're in the trivia segment. Huh. We'll get into it next week.
Uh-oh. A little cliffhanger. Okay.
What is the highest scoring game comprised entirely of solo home runs? Means that every run in the game for both teams was as a result of a solo home run.
So like combined score.
Combined score.
Interesting.
All solo home runs.
I feel like that happened this year. Okay. All right. No. All right. But I don't want to give anything away.
It may have happened this year, but it may or may not have been the highest scoring game in which this has happened.
Wow. This is a crazy one. This is hard. This is a tough one.
Maybe so.
All right. I'm kicking around an idea here, but...
I don't know.
Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. You know where to find us. And that's a tough one. That one's going to take a week. That one's going to have to...
Well, we'll see if anyone, any home run nerds are truly out there that know.
That, I feel like it's probably on a bad team, but hey, I don't know. Maybe it's on a good team. Because again, I'm thinking of a really good team that it happened to this year. I'm almost certain I could be wrong. But
there's you know, there's also a couple of parks in which a lot of home runs are hit.
Well, that's true.
You know.
All right. Well, you have a week to cogitate. On that note, from San Francisco, California, I am Adam Nelson,
and I am Samuel Paul. Remember, baseball is life. The rest, just details.
Go watch some baseball.